All right, welcome to the class, Motivating the Lethargic. When I was young, growing up, I lived on a farm. We had cows and chickens and some goats. And I always enjoyed working with the cows. We'd have a day that we called working cows. We were going to work cows today, and I enjoyed that. We'd get all the cows up to the corral, get them in the corral, then we'd take them through one at a time and put them through the head chute and, you know, worm them or whatever. It was always fun. You know, if you're standing up by the head chute, you hold that bar and wham, when they stick their head through, and we'd work them. But one time we had a cow that was especially stubborn. And in fact, once it had a big old white scar on its forehead because one time it tried to charge my dad and he had a big stick and whacked it across his forehead and it kept that scar. So we knew which one it was. Anyway, so we decided it was enough. This cow would make some wonderful hamburgers and not so much a wonderful cow to keep on the farm. And so we decided we're going to take it to the sale barn. So we got it in the corral with some other cows, lured it in with some feed, and chased the other cows out, and then tried to get this cow into the trailer. And if any of y'all have ever had a stubborn cow to try to get into the trailer, you know what I'm talking about. It was very difficult. Finally, we tried using a shock stick to get it, and we tried using just whatever we could, using gate to try to push it in. Finally, we all got in there, and we were trying to get it in, and we had it almost going in, and all of a sudden, it just panicked and turned around and dove through our ranks and headed straight for the edge of the corral gates, and I thought it was just going to bust right through the corral, but last minute it leaped up, launched, began a launch over the corral. I never thought a cow could do that. And the front feet and head made it up over the corral, and the back end did not make it over the corral. So now we have a new style of gate that we had on our farm. And I'll come back to this story a little later. So motivating the lethargic. Evidently, you must have some experience with this, some of you at least. Maybe that's why you came to this class, because you have a student that you probably can think of. I wonder how I'm going to motivate this student this next year. And so let's look at what motivating the lethargic means. Motivate means to prod to action, to cause to desire change. And that's a key word, to cause to desire change. This cow did not want to go into the trailer, and there was almost no way. We could have maybe roped it and tied it up and dragged it into the trailer, but the key thing is getting them to want to change. Lethargic means stuck in the mud, indifference, or apathy. And again, down there, apathy means a lack of interest or concern, just a careless attitude. Motivate to prod with something, to provide with something such as the need or desire that causes a person to act. And then lethargic means of, relating to, or characterized by laziness or lack of energy. I love what Howard said about his disease of laziness that some of his students have. That must be probably pretty common among students. So how can we motivate a student with that disease? Well, first of all, I want to look at why we want to motivate. If we don't know why we want to motivate our students, we don't know why we should motivate our students, then we probably won't be as apt to motivate them. And I'm going to, first of all, point fingers at the teacher. The teacher is mainly responsible to fix the problem. We'll look at a motivated teacher and a loving teacher. And then we will look at the student, what we need to do in relation to the students. So first, we'll be talking about your own personal things you need to do in your life, and then we'll look at the student and what we need to do for the student. And lastly, we will look at some practical ideas for motivation. And I want to make it as practical as I can so that you can take home actually ideas, something that you can use, not just theory. So why do we want to motivate the student? And first reason I have is we want to cause the student to learn. If the student is not motivated, if the student is lazy, not doing their work, they're not learning. And that's what the parents are paying you for, is to teach the student, to cause the student to learn. Second is we want the student to complete his work or finish his work. And so many times that's the part of the problem is we have a student that is maybe lazy or maybe is slow and doesn't complete his work and he's getting behind. How can we motivate that student? We want him to complete his work and to catch up and to be with the other students. C, it's to improve his behavior and performance. Sometimes we have students that are maybe they're just have a problem of paying attention in class or have a problem with whispering or something like that. We want to motivate them to improve their behavior and their performance. Performance would be more the idea of their grades. We want to improve their grades. And I always enjoyed in school when we had teacher had motivational charts where we were able to work toward a goal in our grades and try to get better grades. And that's great if you can do something like that. And lastly, and most importantly, is to develop good lifelong habits and character. We must remember that if your reason for motivating them is to fix a problem in your class, because this student is really getting annoying on me, getting on my nerves because he's just not keeping up, and I know he could keep up, and that's the only reason you're motivating, then you need to rethink your reasons, because you need to think about this student is one day going to be an adult, and they need those habits and character that they will develop in school that you can help them develop through motivation. Okay, the motivated teacher. And again, a motivated teacher produces motivated students. And I'm sure you've heard this before. Motivated teacher produces motivated students. But it's true. It sounds so simple, but it's so true. If a teacher is not motivated, the students will not be motivated. Now, there's times when there is a motivated teacher and maybe the students still aren't motivated, but you have to start there. You have to be motivated yourself in order to have motivated students. And I'll make another statement here. If the student is lazy, that is the parent's fault. If he's bored, then it's your fault as a teacher. And I have to clarify that. That's a general rule. What I'm saying is it's the parent's responsibility to teach them good work ethics. It's your responsibility to be interesting and to keep them interested in class. The parents have no control over if the student is bored in class. I mean, that's your responsibility. So I'm going to be addressing the issue of avoiding boredom, and then we'll address the issue of laziness later on. We can work with it. But if the parents have taught that, it makes our job so much easier if they are taught hard work at home. Okay, and part of being motivated is, number one, is be prepared. This is A under section two. You have to be prepared. And if you were in Jonathan Erb's class on preparation, he said the three most important things for a teacher are preparation, preparation, and preparation. Got to be prepared. There's nothing worse than, if you come to a class and the teacher is just mumbling around and doesn't know what he's talking about, and I'll have to confess, I've done that before. Come to class one time and I opened the lesson to lesson 23 in math, and I taught the whole lesson, and at the end I told the students, I said, now, any questions on the lesson? Or I'm not sure exactly what it was. And one student was like, yes. He's like, weren't we supposed to do lesson 22? That is bad if that's something like that happens. Now, maybe it happens I was not as prepared as I should have been if you teach the wrong lesson. So be prepared. In this book, I use these books to study for the topic. This book is Teach Like a Champion by Doug Lamov, and in it I got a quote from Bobby Knight, who was a legendary basketball coach. He said, "Most people have the will to win, but few have the will to prepare to win." Most people have the will to win. Most people want to win. Most teachers want to be successful. But not as many teachers, and hopefully here, this is not true for here, but hopefully most of you also want to prepare to win. That's the hard part, is you want to be successful, but you have to prepare. You have to want to prepare to be successful as well. Success does not come just naturally. It takes work. Proper prior planning prevents preposterously poor performance. Maybe you've heard that quote before. Or you could say proper prior planning promotes peak performance. So you must have proper planning. And I like what one of the teachers said already. Better to spend an hour in preparation for the next day's lesson than an hour in checking the previous day's lesson or trying to figure out maybe what went wrong or something. Prepare the next lesson. You're better off doing that than you are in actually going back over and checking the previous day's lesson. I mean, you should do both, but if you have to pick one, do the preparation. And B is be enthusiastic. Be enthusiastic. Be excited about your subject. And that's not always easy, especially if you're teaching grammar or something. That's how it was for me. Something that maybe I'm not as good at or not interested in as much. It's sometimes hard to be excited about something like that, but it goes back to being prepared. And the next thing is be interesting, which, again, these all go together very much. But be interesting. Use objects when you teach. Use illustrations. Use stories. Jesus used stories when he taught. Begin your lessons with a hook, something to catch their attention so that you have them. Most times if you have a lethargic student, or especially if you have a bunch of lethargic students, it's possibly because you didn't catch their attention. In the book Teach Like a Champion, he says that if you begin teaching before you have your students' attention, and you stop and you keep on teaching until after you've lost their attention, it's just like teaching before your students come to school and teaching after they leave. If you don't have their attention, then you're wasting your time. So you're better off stopping, getting their attention, and then moving on. Be interesting. Okay, the loving teacher. And this is something that really struck home to me just studying for this topic. As I thought about loving your students, and I realized that, you know, we would all say that we love our students, I think. But is it real love? Is it true love? You can only truly love your students if you're a Christian and you love God. And that's something that's like, okay, so if someone's not a Christian, they cannot love their students. The Bible says, "He that loveth is born of God and knoweth God." That's 1 John 4:7. He that loveth knoweth God. And I'm talking about true love. True love comes only from God. That's point A. True love comes only from God. You cannot produce it on your own. Now, we can produce a feeling type of love for our students. And especially if it's a good student, it's pretty easy to produce that kind of love for them. But when it's the lazy student or the careless student, and you're checking their tests, and there's three answers that are left blank, and they didn't even put the answer in, it's kind of hard to love the student. Or if they wrote down some answer that totally doesn't make sense. And maybe that was my fault in the first place. But that's where true love comes in. And there's a quote I want to from the book Christopher Dot, put together by John D. Martin. A very good book to read as well. If you don't have it, you can get it. I think it might be in the catalog or the inventory out there. But Christopher Dock said, I quote, "First, I owe God particular thanks, because besides calling me to this profession, he has given me an extreme love of children. For if it were not for love, it would be unbearable burden. It would be an unbearable burden to live among children. But love bears and never tires. If a natural mother did not love her children, all the little incidents in the education of a child would be unbearably wearisome, but her love makes this burden light." That's in page 38. And I can give an example of that. Since I have become a father, I have seen firsthand a mother's love for her children. And I was just reminded of that just this past summer. Our son Alec is 2 years old, and we decided it's about time we start teaching him potty training. And we figured, you know, maybe we'll do it in a week or maybe 2 weeks. We should be able to do it. And I realized that maybe some do it in a week. I don't know, but we sure haven't been able to. But, you know, some days you think, you know, you're doing well and got it all done, and then the next day it's like, makes a mess 4 times in a row, you know, and it's like, if you didn't love your child, it would be very hard to keep on loving him, truly loving your child after that. Or maybe, you know, you come into the house one day and you get home from work and mom and the son are out of sight, and you see this glob on the kitchen floor that looks like something that should have went somewhere else. Love bears and never tires. And 1 Corinthians 13 says, charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Love bears and never tires. And, you know, if you've taught for several years, you'll realize that, yeah, without love, without true love, it would be unbearably wearisome to live among children, because they will try you out and they will do things that are not easy to like. But we are called to love them regardless. And when we love them, when we love that lethargic student that we have a hard time loving, the one that you have the hardest time loving is the one that needs your love the most. And when you love that student, it will totally change your outlook of it. And he will, again, like another teacher said earlier this week, maybe it was Howard, I'm not sure, but gave an example of the two teachers and how one really cared about their students. It was the same group of students, but the one teacher cared about them, the other was just trying to do her job. And the students, the difference was that the teacher cared about the students and the students knew it. And that was a part of the thing that made the difference in the class. So you must love your students, and true love bears and never tires. Okay, going to the student now, the successful student. How can we have a lethargic student. That's what we're looking at. We're looking at turning this lethargic student into a successful student, one who can be prepared to face life when he gets out of school. He needs to be prepared to face life, and that's part of our job, to prepare him. So, first of all, you want to create a need or desire in the student. Create a need or desire. This is point A. I have to think of a good car salesman. They have a way of creating a desire, a need in your life for that car or truck or whatever it is they want to sell. Or a mini barn salesman. You know, they can think of all kinds of reasons why you need a mini barn or whatever it might be. We need to do that as teachers. We need to be good car salesmen. And just transmit a need in our make a need in our students for what they're learning. Somehow make it practical for them that this is something that they will use in life. Create a need and a desire in them. And part of that is stimulating their curiosity. And I'm going to get more to that a little later on. Stimulate their curiosity so that they want to hear more about this and they're excited about it. So B is allow the student to taste success. Allow the student to taste success. And I am horrible at basketball. I never really enjoyed playing basketball. And a lot of the reason is I'm not very good at it. Pretty horrible at it. And so I have a hard time enjoying basketball because I'm not a success at it. And that's the way the students feel about their schoolwork. If they feel like they're a failure in their schoolwork, they will not enjoy their schoolwork. So if you can allow them to taste success, and that goes right along with point one there, ask them the questions Instead of them asking you the questions, well, that's fine. But ask them the questions. In the book, The Seven Laws of Teaching, he says, never tell a student something that he can figure out for himself. So often we as teachers, we just love to share information and we love to tell facts, and the students are supposed to just be soaking it all up. But allow them to be almost ahead of us in their thinking process, and them to, you know, ask them questions. So if this is, if the 3/4 is the same equal fraction as 6/8, you know, how does that work? And ask them, get them to figure it out in their minds. Ask them the questions and let them tell you the answers to the problem. Maybe one of the students has a question about something. Give an opportunity for one of the other students to answer that question before you answer it. Let them explain the problem to you. Maybe, and that's one thing you should do probably at the end of every class, is after you explain the problem, you model the problem for them, show them the steps, and then let them explain how to do it back to you after you're done. If they can explain it back to you, then you know they've caught it. So let them taste success. Ask them the questions. A successful lesson is rarely marked by teachers getting a good intellectual workout at the front of the room. And I thought that was really good. You know, if you're going into school and you're planning to just really get a good intellectual workout and really do a lot of brain exercise, figuring out problems on the board, and the students are just sitting there watching, that's not going to be a successful lesson. Again, that's from Teach Like a Champion. The students should be the ones getting the good intellectual workout, not you. Although it might happen for you too, but focus on the student getting a good workout. And that gives him the feeling of success when he can do problems and he gets them right. And don't just stop. Don't say after they get one problem right, okay, you can go back to your desk now. They need to be getting several problems right before they go back to their desk. Let them taste success. Now, you might have this problem. You say, okay, Johnny, what's 3/4 of 20? And I don't know. You know, the lethargic student, that's probably what they would say, right? So what do you do then? And that's point C. Don't allow non-participation. You cannot allow non-participation. So what Doug does in his book is he calls it the no opt-out rule. So that if one student says, I don't know, then you say, okay, Mary, what is 3/4 of 20? And she says, 15. Okay, Johnny, what is 3/4 of 20? And he has to answer the question. So he realizes that, you know, next time, if I say I don't know, that's not going to get me out of answering the problem. I'm still going to have to answer it after someone else does. And he'll at least put more effort into it. And sometimes maybe you just need to give him a little more time or give them some cues to help get him started, and he can figure it out. But let him taste the success. Let him figure it out as much as possible. And D is praise him when he succeeds. That is so important. As much as possible, that lethargic student that is struggling for whatever reason, praise them when they succeed. That is the most powerful thing you can do for a lethargic student, is praise him when he succeeds. And he will want to succeed again. Okay, practical ideas for motivation. And a lot of the determining factor for ideas for motivation are first of all, you have to determine the reason for the student's poor performance. There's many reasons a student might be performing poorly, and I see we have some time here. So let's just go over some of those. What are some reasons that you might have, what you might think is a lethargic student, a student that is slow or lazy or careless or just overall poor performance? What might be the reason for his poor performance?
He's tired.
Okay, very good. He's tired.
Comes from that, but trouble at home.
Okay, thank you. I was hoping someone would say that. Yeah. And those are reasons probably that you don't have a whole lot of control over. There might be some that you could have more control over, some other reasons.
Ending the previous day on a bad note.
Okay. ending the previous day on a bad note. Yeah, that's important too. That can be, maybe he got somehow embarrassed in class or something. Maybe you kind of got a little bit frustrated with him, and he felt that at the end of class.
Testing of authority to see where the lines are.
Okay.
Are you going to make me behave? Okay. Are you going to make me do the lesson?
Okay, so you're saying his poor performance is because he is trying to test you out and see if you're going to, yeah.
If you're going to follow through on what you say.
Okay, yeah, very good.
He may not have had enough breakfast.
Okay. My students sometimes say, well, oh, I don't eat breakfast. I don't ever eat breakfast. Yeah, those are all very good. Thank you. So there might be some reasons, you know, that you have no control over. So be understanding there. If there is some stuff going on at home or other things, maybe they just came back from a trip or something. Maybe his favorite dog just died. I don't know. You know, obviously, if it's a reason like laziness or boredom, or there's one more that I wanted to point out. The one more reason for poor performance, and that would be a slow learner. If he's got a learning disability or something, then we need to be very careful and deal with that appropriately and help him in that. I mean, regardless of where they're at, we can still help them, but especially be mindful if he has some type of learning disability that we can work with that has ways of dealing with that, or different style of teaching. So once you figure out why that student is performing the way he is, then you can more practically apply that and figure out what you need to do. So one idea for motivation is B, divide the assignment into smaller chunks. And just imagine yourself back at the 12 years old, and maybe you weren't like me, but if you were like me, then your room might have looked like a hurricane sometimes. And maybe, you know, mom comes in and says, Derek, I want you to clean your room. And it's a large statement, and I'm like sitting there on the bed, I'm like, it's going to take me all day. But, you know, maybe we need to divide it into smaller chunks. And my mom did very well at this sometimes, just making a list of things I need to do. You know, first of all, pick up all the clothes off the floor. Then you need to put any toys or games away. Then you need to do this. Just divide it into steps that are manageable for your student. You know, this might mean do 5 problems in math. Do that once, and then I'll come look at it and see where you're at. Instead of just throwing the whole thing at him and maybe it just looks huge to him, have him do 5 problems, and maybe even give him a timer if he's not some students that doesn't work for, but you can for some. Say, I want you to have these 5 problems done by in a certain amount of time. That can help. So it's not so overwhelming for them that they just had this huge assignment or all this work to do and they're just overwhelmed. And I'm going to ask you for some more ideas later on. C, use primarily intrinsic motivation. And I assume most of you are familiar with that term. Intrinsic motivation simply means reasons that aren't necessarily tangible. Extrinsic motivation would be you give them tangible rewards, whereas intrinsic would be more just do it because of the rewards of success. And I think that is the key. I hesitate as teachers. I don't like to see too much where we're always just, you know, and the only way they're going to do their best on their test is if they get a dollar or if they get a piece of candy or something for that. Maybe some of y'all disagree with me on that. I think it's okay sometimes, but let's not just always give them a reward every time they do something well, because it's not always that way in life. You might go home and you might spend a lot of time and hard work in preparing for your first day of school. And do you think the school board's going to come and give you a big gift or something after that first day? You know, you're doing it for intrinsic rewards, not necessarily for extrinsic. D is use a variety of methods. Again, there are a variety of reasons why a student might be performing poorly. There's also a variety of different types of students. Every student is different. And so you have to use different methods for different students. Here's an example of how my mom, what method her mother, not her teacher, used on her when she was a little girl.
Okay, I remember when I was in fourth grade, I did not care about math. And our teacher had a chart on the bulletin board, a motivational chart. And I looked at it and I was like, I don't care about that. It's too hard. I didn't like math. I hated math. And so I just didn't pay any attention to it. And I wasn't learning my multiplication tables. And in the evening, my mom would try to help me learn the multiplication tables, but I didn't want to learn them because I hated math. And so she locked me in the bathroom. She said, "You're going to stay in here until you learn your multiplication tables." And so every evening I was locked into the bathroom until I learned a certain amount of multiplication tables. And that's how I learned my multiplication tables, because my mom locked me in the bathroom.
So that might not work for everyone. And maybe you can't do that as a teacher, but, you know, that worked for her. Figure out what works for your student. And lastly, I have on F, never give up. And that's part of the key to never give up. Sometimes it might take, might not be something that's going to change in 1 year. This student might just be, especially if, depending on how he was brought up and how he was trained, they might be that way. Never give up on them. But now I want to open it up to you. Do you have any ideas on ways that you can motivate a lethargic student, or things, what do you do? How many of y'all use some type of motivational chart or something? Okay, some of y'all. I like to use one of those every year too. It's more a temporary, you know, they do better while the chart is going, but then when you quit, they kind of go back again. But I still think it's good to do something like that. I remember when, actually my second year that I taught, I used a type of motivational chart where whenever they got a grade over 95, then they were able to put a sticker up on the board, and once we got a certain number of stickers, then we did something special. What do you think about motivational charts? What are some requirements for them? How can we do them to where that it's everyone can be motivated, and not just the ones that do well in school?
Well, as a general rule, I think something that I try to work toward is making it to where motivational charts and programs and things like that are a group effort. So some students are going to do a lot better than others. Mm-hmm. And so, but if it is a group effort, then hopefully they'll get involved. But yet, nobody's singled out because one student is struggling and one is a super easy time in school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good.
So instead of, like, if you're looking for good grades or something, instead of saying, let's see how many 100% you get, pick their average on the report card and just make them work towards their personal goal.
Mm-hmm.
Then it feels like they're accomplishing something more.
Yeah, I like that.
Improvement as compared to reaching a certain mark. Mm-hmm. Such as 100 or something. Mm-hmm. Each person, the 85% student that picks his up to 88, mm-hmm. is doing something.
Exactly. Yeah. I like that. Needs to be something that each student can taste success and to help toward the goal. I've heard of teachers that have done where anytime they get maybe, like you said, a grade, a certain number of points. I think it was if their average was 95, anytime they got a 95 or above, they got to put a quarter in a jar. If their average was between 85 and 95, then they had to, every time they got a grade that was maybe 2 points above their grade average or something, they put a quarter in the jar, and if it was lower than that, it had to be whatever. And then when they had enough quarters in the jar, then they went and had a pizza dinner. And students will do all kinds of stuff for pizza. So that's always a good motivator. Yes?
I've done that very thing, but I had a deal where, I can't remember, it was a couple years ago, I can't remember where I started at, but if they got below a certain grade, they actually had to take one out of the jar.
Okay.
And I like that because the lethargic person, I wasn't putting pressure on him. Trust me, the students were. And I liked it because it took all responsibility off of me. I had to, you know, you have to watch, be careful in this kind of situation that they don't become critical, but mm-hmm. I didn't find it to be that way. They were actually more encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
There were times like that. And I feel like that was a big help in some of the slower people that just flat didn't care. They actually could care if they were getting pizza at the end of the time. And so it wasn't just, there was no sitting in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It either added or it took out, and so it forced them to do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. I like that. Yes?
If you do the money thing, we collected money and then actually gave it to an organization, and that was a highlight, or did like bundles for Christian Aid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
The reward of helping somebody else.
Yeah, so intrinsic reward there. Mm-hmm.
This is kind of the flip side, but my dad makes my younger siblings bring home any grade lower than 85 for a signature. That really helps the teachers out.
Yeah. Yeah, and I hope I've not just emphasized this, the part of giving them things to motivate them. There are times when we need to put in some disciplinary measures, especially if it's a student that is lazy or just careless. I would very much emphasize that you need to be careful, unless you know the student is not doing their best, to be careful about disciplining them. I don't think we should discipline a student for a bad grade unless we know they could have done better. Be very sure that you know that they could have done better. If you just give them discipline them for getting a bad grade and maybe they did their best, that's going to really leave a bad taste in there, and it'll do the opposite. It'll be counterproductive. Yes?
For one student I had, he was really struggling in reading. His reading grades were just extremely low. And I kind of waited it out to see exactly I wasn't sure exactly what all was going on, but I was convinced that some of it was he was being very slipshoddy in his work. And so I created a chart where we graphed all his reading grades.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed. It was kind of an off-the-cuff thing to try. And I was amazed at how well it worked. And then he could ask to see that. I didn't give it to him. I graphed it for him. And anytime he wanted to, he'd come and answer. And I was amazed how much he checked in,
mm-hmm.
maybe at recess before we went out or something. And we'd talk about it a little bit. And so he could actually visualize up and down where he was going. I think what happens sometimes, it's just a number at the top of their page. They don't really see. It's kind of like a bank account. When you swipe your card, you don't feel the money going out of your account. But if you have $100 in wallet, you use cash, it's like, wow, there goes two of them, $220 or whatever. And I felt like that's kind of how it worked with him. He could actually see, wow, this is a pretty chart, and this looks good. And I was amazed. I did it for not a stretch of time, and it was amazing how it started evening out.
Mm-hmm.
So, just an idea.
Yeah, that's it.
Sometimes it appears like they have laziness, but it's actually maybe just they can't see what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. Yes.
This would be more for the struggling student, more like they're being lethargic because it's so huge.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I did, I had a student that it was just math was just really bad. And just because it was very hard. And one thing I found out for the motivation part of it, I would say, you know what, if you can do this problem by yourself, we'll knock off the next one. And that would put them to where they would really try, and then you could also tell if they knew it or whether they were just not wanting to put the effort in. And that would help like crazy.
Yeah, that's excellent idea, especially again, like she said, for a struggling student. Don't do that with a lazy student, but with a struggling student, yes. Any others? And I like the feeling I'm getting here. So you can do a motivational something for an individual student. It doesn't have to always be just for the whole class. It could be just for a certain student in a certain area. And don't think that you're exposing that student by doing that. The other students already all know which ones are struggling, which ones are not doing well. They already know that. I mean, you don't have to emphasize it, but you don't have to necessarily hide it either. They know the struggling ones, and then sometimes you know they're rooting for that student as well. If you can help them to be involved in the encouraging process.
So what are some good ideas for determining whether somebody is being lazy or if it's just too tough for them?
Okay. What are some ideas for determining? So back to point A. How can we determine the reason for their poor performance, whether it's laziness or struggling? What's your feedback?
I guess use the scientific method, do some tests. Calculate the data. I had a student this past year that I kind of knew when he came to my room that I was going to have to do something. He would just sit there sometimes. And so I kind of come up with this system where he's, how did I do that? He had to be so far, I think he had to have his math done by first grade. And if he didn't, he had to skip break. I don't like to do this too much, but recess was something he loved, and I thought this is going to get through better than anything else. So he had to have everything, math done by first break, English had to be done by lunch, and I think that's where I stopped then. If he wasn't done with math first break, he had to skip break. If he wasn't done by English by lunch, he had to skip lunch recess. That boy worked like I never saw him before, and his grades were as good as the rest. So it told me right there that he could do it. And I talked to him a couple of times. I said, you can do this stuff. I mean, you're just proving it to me. And he kind of had a sheepish grin on his face because he knew that he could. So there was a little test I did that told me that he can actually do it. Now, if he wouldn't have been able to, then I would have told me he wasn't. But I really was cautious about trying that because I didn't want to be too hard on him, but I honestly was sick and tired of it. And so I said, something's going to have to hurt a little bit. And it seemed to work.
So try out a few methods, try out a few motivational techniques, and see how they respond to that, and that can be an indicator of what the problem is. Even the first week of school is a good indicator. Usually the first week of school they come in, no one has a problem with motivation the first week of school, usually. And so look at their performance the first week of school, and then you can kind of see, is it going downhill, or is it, you know, that's a good way to tell. Any others? Now, any other questions about something that we talked about?
You mentioned about home problems, stresses at home. Things. Is there anything, is that just completely out of the teacher's realm? Is there anything that they can do when there is problems at home?
So is there anything that you can do to help if there's problems at home?
I found in general that it takes more than a year usually, but if you can create a safe place for them in the classroom, even if there are problems at home, if they can be excited about coming to school, and there's different ways to get that, but often you can at least somewhat mediate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that thought. It's good. Maybe you could fix some of the problems at home, but is it your job to? I don't know. One thing you can always do, and you can always pray for the student, pray for the situation. Let's never underestimate the power of prayer, and that's part of loving your student. If you love your student, truly love them, you will care about them, you will pray for them and their family, whatever they're going through. Figure out what it is so that you can are better equipped to deal with it, I think. That's helpful. Any other questions yet?
Is there a danger of pushing a student to emergency mode? I mean, we can all work at our normal pace, and if something's going to happen, we can shoot out for a little bit, but is it sustainable? So setting timers, then you have to have it done by first recess. Mm-hmm. So it works the day you do it, and the next day it works back normal. Is that they just pushed in the emergency mode, or could it be something that can be sustainable?
Yeah. And that's something you're going to have to use your own discretion, you know, to see how the student is doing and to be, you know, be understanding with them. Yeah, sure. Anyone else have an idea or answer on that?
Yeah,
think with the likelihood of in the state we really ever push our students to emergency mode.
Yeah. We probably could do more pushing than we do. Just as long as we don't err on the side of causing them to feel like they're a failure. And that's what can happen if you push them too hard, is if you're pushing them toward a goal that's unattainable for them, then they will feel like they're a failure. So you must allow them to taste success and experience success, and that building of successes upon successes will help them improve, and it might be a gradual process to take time. But again, in closing, I told you the point F was never give up. But in closing, there are times when you are motivated, you're enthusiastic, but the student is still listless and lethargic. Maybe there are issues going on at home that you have no control over. Be consistent, be firm, be understanding, be loving. Don't be loving. Show love to the student. Don't just be loving. You have to show love to the student. Pray for the student and keep doing your best. Thank you.